This audio production is presented by Good Shepherd Presbyterian Church in Ocala, Florida. For more resources, visit us online at gspcocala.com.
Passage is from the book of Ruth, chapter 2. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I worked today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law. May his word give us life.
Thank you, Nikki. Would you all please bow your heads and pray with me? Father, would you open up our hearts to hear your word this morning? Would you remind us of our need for redemption to be worked in our lives? Would you give us a hunger, a holy dissatisfaction with where we are today, and a longing for a full, complete, and right redemption of all things? Father, I ask that you would be kind enough to these, your people, that you would speak through me today, that each and every one of us gathered here would know you more, would see your great redeeming love for us, and be changed by time in your word. In Christ's name, amen. So Mike asked if I was editing the passage because I went up to him right before we started and said, would it be better if I just rock through all of chapter 2 or maybe cut it in half and take my time? And I asked him because I really don't know which way I'm going right now. But we're going to have some fun. We're digging into Ruth. My job as I preach Ruth is to try to avoid just giving you principles to go and be better. We could spend, especially with this chapter, we could look at the character of Boaz, we could look at the work ethic and love of Ruth, and I could give you a bundle to carry out of here saying, you ought to be like that. Go do it. If you love Jesus, you would be more like Boaz, and that's not the idea. I also could just sit here and retell the story, that would be really fun, quite honestly, but I don't know if it would give you the connect that we're longing for. When the Lord gives us this story, he wants to show us what his redemption looks like, right? I've said it every time, when we call this a story, we're not saying it's fiction. It is a narrative. It is written and orchestrated beautifully, even in some ways, it's kind of crafty in the way that the writer has written this story, and it's true. It's what happened. So as we hold on to that, what you see in the story and in the characters is you see God working redemption. It is who he is. It is what he does. When we talk about the story of the Bible, the fourfold move of the story that we often use is the move of creation, fall, redemption, and glory. And if you know the Bible, you know creation happens in the first two chapters, the fall happens in the third, and redemption is all the rest of them until about chapter 20 of Revelation when you get three chapters left in the whole book. So redemption is a pretty key part of the storyline. Some would say it's the biggest part. Wondering and understanding, what does it look like when God is redeeming me? What does it look like when God is redeeming people around me? What does it look like when God is working his redemption in my time in history? And we learn a lot about what God does as we look at this story of Ruth. To remind you where we were last week, Naomi and Ruth are coming back into Bethlehem after having been gone. Naomi's family left Bethlehem, left the promised land, went and sojourned in Moab, a place of God's enemies, where they picked up a couple of God's enemies, Moabites, Orpah and Ruth. After all the men have died, Naomi is empty, barren, hopeless, old, and despairing, and she decides she's going back home to Bethlehem, back to God's people, back to God's land, and Ruth sticks with her. Ruth has converted. She has trusted in God. We don't know how. All we know is that her faith is seemingly unshakable as she commits to be not only following God, but alongside Naomi all the way to her own death. And as we left them, they came into Bethlehem. And all the women who remembered Naomi after all these decades of her being gone look at her and say, oh, Naomi. And Naomi, in her depression and her bitterness and her exhaustion, looks at them and says, don't call me Naomi. Call me bitter, because God has been bitter to me. And part of the beauty of that, when Naomi is in her sorrow, in her overwhelming distress and cannot see how anything could turn back to pleasant, what Naomi means, she lashes out against people who are welcoming her home. And I don't know about you, when I see people like that, when I experience people who are enwrapped in their bitterness and despair, oftentimes it can be easy to dismiss them or to name them that. Oh, that person's just bitter. That their life has gone so wrong, it has enveloped them and they just can't get over it. That's just, right? These are some of the most damning words you can say about anybody. That's just who they are. And if there's anybody, Naomi, when she says, don't change my name, go to the courthouse, I'm no longer Naomi, I'm bitter, I'm Mara, that's who I am. God has said so, I'm bitter. And you notice what the narrator does here, the writer of the story? Don't call me Naomi, call me bitter, verse 22. And so Naomi returned. There's this beauty in this underlying storyline all along that even though Naomi is hopeless, Naomi is in despair, Naomi can see no way out of it, redemption doesn't abandon her. God doesn't say, well, I guess there's no hope there. He continues to name her who she is and doesn't allow her circumstances and her response to change that. And so Ruth and Naomi come back at the time of the barley harvest. And I mentioned to you last week that that's a really exciting thing. That's really exciting. There had been famine and now there's harvest. And they're coming back right when there's a chance for life. And as they enter in, as they look for this hope of things turning around and redemption coming, we hear in verse 1 of chapter 2, the narrator inserts, there was this guy named Boaz. And hopefully you get the sense of listening around to old people tell stories where they drop a little hint about, now you need to know that that's the town that we grew up in. Or it's a drop that, hey, we're getting to why this is important, but you don't need to know anything other than there was a guy. And we meet Boaz. Boaz is referred to as a worthy man, which to break down what that really means, it means he was good. And he was rich. It's what it means. It doesn't just mean that he's a righteous guy, which would be good. If there's a righteous guy in this story, it's like, that's great. But we also need somebody who actually has power. We need somebody with resources. These ladies have nothing. And so if we just say there was a good guy who did good things, and he didn't have anything, but he did good stuff, that doesn't really further the story for them. Or if we said there was this rich guy, well, that's not going to help them either. They need somebody who's actually righteous and capable of doing something. And we hear this, that Boaz is of their clan, which means he's family. He's somehow connected to Naomi and Naomi's husband who has passed, Elimelech. But that's all you get for now. The scene turns immediately back to Ruth, the Moabite. And as you're reading this, you'll hear over and over again, This deep connection, making sure you don't forget, Ruth is from Moab. Ruth is a Moabite. Ruth is an outsider. Ruth does not belong. If you will, in this story, Ruth is the most useless person in the room. Now, some of you are offended that I said that. Why is Ruth useless? Ruth is a foreigner in the people of Israel. She is a Moabite, so a very particular foreigner, foreign enemy. She's a woman, right, in a time when a woman had no power, authority, or anything, and she's simply there tagging along in a foreign land. She has the least amount of rights of anybody in the room, and she has the least amount of power of anybody in the room, and it's very intentional that the author is continuing to say, that's who she is. You got to see. No one would look for hope to come from Ruth. It says Ruth is a Moabite. And so she says to Naomi, right? They've entered in. They're in Bethlehem. We don't know where they're staying. We don't know much of anything because Naomi is so down, she can't do anything. And Ruth, again, connecting herself into Naomi, not being overwhelmed by Naomi's hopelessness, says, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I find favor. Now, gleaning, A little bit of historical background, right? Gleaning is this idea that the Jewish law set up. God in his law said, I want you to make room for the poor and the outcast so that when you're harvesting your field, he says, you don't get to harvest the edges of your fields. You don't get to take all of your profits. Don't harvest them, but leave them there so that any person who is impoverished, any person who is in need, who doesn't have enough, can come and on the sides of your field, they get to harvest. And then they get to pick up anything you drop. You drop it, leave it there, they can pick it up. It's my way of providing for them, and it's my way of having you also care for them. It was this law, which, just as a reminder, this is during the time of the judges. And if the judges is characterized by anything, it is not following the law. And so Ruth decides she's going to go out and collect and glean. Notice, after him in whose sight I find favor, Ruth is not a fool. Again, in the time of judges, if she as a woman goes out by herself, a foreigner, goes out by herself to work among men by herself at this time in Israel. You know what that means? Right? Have you read the book of Judges? Have you seen what happens to women over and over in the book of Judges? A woman who is not overseen and cared for by someone else is treated as absolute trash by the normal Israelite man. And so she goes out knowing, my only hope is that they did not harvest all their stuff, which most likely most people did, and that when I get there, the men there do not hurt me. And notice what Naomi says. See you later. Again, remembering Naomi is overwhelmed by loss and pain. And in her state, she cannot even say, well, there's this guy named Boaz, maybe try his field. She can't say, well, I'll come with you. Right? Naomi is not an invalid. Naomi is not incapable. She is emotionally incapable of stepping up. But she doesn't look at Ruth and say, thank you, nothing. She's like, all right, later. You can see her sitting in the dark room, despairing all day. While Ruth happens upon Boaz's field, verse 3, as she went out gleaning, as she's working, as she's tirelessly going after it, she finds herself, like, right, again, the narrator's having fun with you, right? The narrator knows this is not happenstance. This is not, Boaz's field. This is very intentionally a way of saying God so orchestrated it that she came to Boaz's field. And just at that same time, behold, Boaz shows up. Boaz is an extraordinary character. Again, we could take the whole time and just talk about what it looks like to be a man of God based on Boaz. Instead of doing that, I want to invite you just to pay attention. Look at how Boaz manages his people. Look at how Boaz runs his business. Look at how Boaz sees people. Look at how Boaz cares for the people he interacts with. Look at Boaz's heart throughout all of this. He's not just a guy who's doing his job. He's not just a guy who's in charge of people. He is shaped differently. And part of the just extraordinary blank page of the book of Ruth, Naomi, in a famine, left home, went to enemy territory, had her husband die, had her sons die, and came home empty. We know her despair. Ruth, the Moabite, attaches herself to Little Miss Despair and is going into a place where she does not know anyone or anything other than Naomi, who's really not somebody that really is a good, you know, networking benefit right now. We know Ruth's despair. We know her loss. Boaz. We find out a little bit later, Boaz is older than Ruth. So what we know about Boaz is a righteous man, he is a wealthy man, and he is single. And some of you are like, all right. We don't know Boaz's story at all. Forgive me for speaking about something that's not there. But let me point out, it's not there. You don't end up where Boaz was just, you know, rainbows and butterflies every day of your life. We don't know the loss he's experienced. All we know is that where he is today is he is a righteous man who has been through a famine. And when he walks up to his workers, he speaks blessing to them and they speak it back to him. This is no, like, you know, this is not formal greeting. This is a recognition that God is caring for us. And I am glad that you're working for me, and I am glad that I work for you. And it's beautiful. And then Boaz sees Ruth. If this was Hallmark Channel, right? And we'll stop there. You got it. It's not Hallmark Channel. One of the things you have to remember, this is a story of redeeming love. And when you hear that and you see a man and a woman and, well, they're going to do whatever it takes to produce a child, you think, oh, this is a romance story. This is not a rom-com, right? This is not a romantic drama. This is not something that the culmination of everything is that they kiss. Right? Don't picture Boaz as this, you know, strikingly good-looking silver fox, right? Nuh-uh. And don't picture Ruth as somehow this exotic foreign beauty. She'd been working all day harvesting barley off the ground. And my man's been rich, righteous, and single for a long time. Don't look at this and think, oh, romance in the air. See love that is so much deeper and fuller than two people staring into each other's eyes because they're attracted to each other. The love that you see here is a redeeming love that sets its love on another person, not because they've somehow overexceeded your idea of what you want, but instead because you've decided to make them beautiful. Because you are going to die so that they can live. That's the romance you're about to see. So Boaz sees Ruth, and we don't know, were there a lot of people gleaning? Was it just Ruth? There's never any other mention of other people gleaning there. All we know is he sees her, and he says, whose young woman is this? Right? He's not like, who's that? Right? It's not. And it's also not, some of you hear that language, you're like, that's offensive. She doesn't have to be anybody's young woman. She's an independent woman. She can handle herself. What is he saying? Who does she belong to? Right away you see Boaz cares for her because he knows in that day, in that time, to see a young woman, a foreign woman, out and about, somebody has to take responsibility to make sure she's cared for. Not because she's incompetent, but because of the world they live in, if there is not a man who will step up and take care of her, she will be mistreated, she will be abused, she will not eat that day. And so when he says, who does she belong to? He's not being, you know, just a jerk. He's actually saying, is no one taking care of her? Is she here by herself? In my field? And you can see that somehow Ruth has already made herself known and visible, because when the foreman responds, right, she's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Again, it'd be fun to just dig into the character. But Ruth works in such a way that all the men who are at work recognize how hard she was working. She wasn't just, you know, grabbing scraps off the ground. And they knew her because she had come and did not presume upon the law or the kindness of anybody and said, "Can I please?" And you know that stuck out to them. And this guy has watched and knows that this is that young lady we saw come into town not too long ago. And she's here. And she has not stopped working all day. I want you to notice the story of Ruth is about the redemption of Naomi. And Ruth, in this scene, is actively working to redeem Naomi. And notice how she's doing it. She's not saying, "I'm here and I've got Naomi and she needs your help. Get over here now." Because she knows that would be foolish. She could not do anything like that. She's also not putting it on herself, "Naomi, I'm going to go find a man today." Right? When she talked to the young man who was in charge of all the reapers, she didn't say, "Hey, can I glean and maybe we could hang out a little bit?" Oh, not you. What about you? Like, she's not making her way all around trying to connect with men. She's doing what she can do. She's picking up grain off the ground. A lot of times when we're walking with somebody who you can see the despair in and you want to be able to speak redemption into their situation, speak life into the death that seems to be wrapping around them, we want to step in and just say, "I've got this," instead of simply doing what we can, of graciously, kindly helping today. And so Ruth, she can't fix Naomi's life. She'd like to. I guarantee you she'd like a happier roommate. And she can't get it all done today. So what does she do? She goes and she gleans. She picks up off the ground whatever she can. She steps into a place that she can and she begins to invite life into Naomi's life. And then verse 8, the story picks up as Boaz actually speaks to her. And I want you to notice, when he speaks to her, what does she do? I don't know if Mike did this on purpose, but it's always fun to see how Mike puts words in our mouths before we get to it in the text. What did she do? What does Ruth do after Boaz speaks to her? This was not rhetorical, sorry. She falls down. Did you do that? Yeah, thank you, appreciate that. We fall down, right? She fell down. Now, in the Bible, when people fall down in front of people, most often it's in front of an angel. And you know what the angel says? "Get up." Sometimes, like in Revelation with John and Jesus, they fall down before God. You know what God says? That's right. Why do you fall down in front of anybody? It's because you are in awe and recognition. What you are doing has melted me. Now, when you and I read what Boaz says, you're going to think, "Oh, appreciate it." You missed it. What Boaz does when he speaks to her is life-altering for her. It makes her into a puddle before him. With that in mind, listen to what he says. First, he speaks to her. You got to understand, Paul Miller says that there are 16 levels of society that separate Boaz and Ruth. It was pretty fun. You talk about a wealthy Israelite male, righteous landowner, all those things, and you got to go way down here. Essentially, there's about two things that Ruth could do that could make her lower than where she is. She could like actively be child sacrificing to Molech in the moment. That would get her only one step lower than where she is. And so when Boaz says, "Excuse me," the chasm that he is jumping over to come down to her is extraordinary. And he doesn't just speak to her. He doesn't say, "Hey, little girl, excuse me, miss." What does he call her? He speaks tenderly to her. He says, "My daughter." Which, these two are going to end up being married. which tells you there's an age gap, but not too much of an age gap. It's noticeable, but not so noticeable. And he, instead of being the creep who says, "Hey, a young lady," he tenderly cares for her and says, I will treat you like my daughter. Come here, my daughter. And he instructs her. He says, "Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women." Now, you may hear that and hear him say, "Look, we got plenty. You take everything we got, work here all day, you're good to go." He's not saying that. When he says, "You stay in my field," this goes back to the danger that she is in any other field. He's not saying, "You're okay there." What he's saying is, "I've got you. You belong with me. Stay here, and I'm going to keep you safe." Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, close to my young women, and go after them. He essentially promotes her, right? She goes from a poor person gleaning, following after, right? The best picture we have is you've got the young men who are grabbing the stalks, chopping them, and putting them on the ground. And then you have the young women who are coming behind and bundling them and setting them up. And then you have Ruth coming behind them and picking up anything they didn't pick up, right? And he says, "Come a little closer. You know what this feels like, right? To be an outsider and come into some place and have somebody say, actually, you come on in here. You have a space here. You belong here." He brings her in and he promises safety. "Have I not charged the young men not to touch you?" Which again, just the way he sees, there is no reason for Boaz, just with his circumstances, to know much or care much about young foreign women and what happens to them, except for God giving him a heart that actually cares. And he sees, look, I don't trust my young men to do this without me telling them, "Don't touch her." And I'm telling you, I've already told them that. I want you to know there's not just an assumption. I am clearly stating I'm caring for you. And then the last thing is perhaps most stunning. "When you're thirsty, go drink water with them." Right? You remember in John 4, the Samaritan woman at the well that Jesus runs into? Her first shock is that he spoke to her. Her second is that you want to drink something that I've touched? Boaz is saying, "We're welcoming you fully in." And it's because of that that Ruth falls to the ground. "Why have I found favor in your eyes?" You see in Boaz a trait that we see in Jesus in the Gospels over and over again. One of the joys of the incarnation is that we get to know where Jesus looked. And you know, if you've ever been in despair, if you've ever been down, if you've ever been beaten up and felt like you were on the outside, one of the greatest redeeming parts is when somebody sees you. They actually see, not like, "Hey, there you are," but they actually see you in your circumstances. And Boaz, like what you see in Jesus, he sees her where she is and knows and goes there, and his compassion overflows. And she is undone by it. And she is in awe of it. She knows she doesn't deserve it. And so she has to ask why. Notice Boaz doesn't say, "Oh, it's no big deal." He's being very intentional and excessive. He says, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. How you left your father and your mother and your native land and you came to a people that you did not know before." Right, again, this is a relative of Naomi. And so he could say, I'm a relative of Naomi, and I kind of felt like you were with her, so just want to help out. But he even notices not just Naomi's loss, but very particularly Ruth. I see what you have lost. No, Naomi never did that. No one in the story has looked at Ruth and said, Ruth, I'm sorry for your loss. And Boaz, for the first time, says, I see that you've lost your husband and you left your home. And so I ask that the Lord repay you for what you have done. And this is key. And a full reward be given to you. By the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. He says, I see that you've come for refuge here. Now, what he's just given her is life, right? They have gone from famine, and now what we'll see eventually, if I get there, is she's taken home 2 weeks worth of food today. Boaz very easily could have said, there you go. You got food. That's what you needed, right? But he says, no. I am asking that the Lord will not just see the redemption that you are working, but that you will be fully rewarded. What does fully rewarded mean for Ruth? That you will have a husband, you will have a home, and you will have children. And Boaz sits there and says, and I know I'm not capable of doing that. Only the Lord can do that. But I'm giving you what I can. So we're going to stop there because of the time, and I want to take longer on this. The way I'm going to stop, though, is I'm going to try and wrap it up instead of, some of you think I'm going to pray now. Preacher speak. Stopping means I've got 5 minutes. When we're looking at the story of redemption and the story of Ruth, it would be very easy to look at the circumstantial things that need to be returned to her for her to be made whole, right? She needs food. Naomi needs to be brought out of this depression. They need men in their life who can change their story, and they need new life. They need a child that will come from this and actually wrap up this story, right? That's what they need circumstantially. And what we will see is those things happen. That those substantive circumstantial things happen because God in his work of redemption is looking at that, not willing to say, well, I know you'd like for it to be better, but don't worry about it. Let's just go to heaven. God is not a God whose redemption plan is just to, oh man, I'm sorry that happened. Let's just go somewhere else. But when God is working redemption, he is working a deep and full redemption. And for us, when we long for redemption, when we need God to come and change our story, when the circumstances we're in seem to never get better, and we're looking at God saying, what are you going to do about it? It is very easy to say, oh, food. Thank you. I guess that's what I get. I will be satisfied with sufficient. And the story of Ruth is going to look at you and say, don't you dare. God is working a full and total redemption. And the way he does it is kind of the way I'm preaching this, is it takes time. He is willing to be long-suffering with us to bring us all the way to the place, not where our circumstances are just better, but where we actually know him. Where we actually are redeemed by one who loves us more than we could ever imagine, and our lives are absolutely altered. That's the way God works his redemption. We'll keep going next week. Let me pray. Father, thank you that you work redemption, that you actually use people to show the way you redeem us. Thank you that you are working that in our lives. God, I pray. For those today who need your work of redemption in their lives, would you show them how you are at work? For those who are despairing, would you bring them comfort? Would you bring them a meal? Would you bring them someone like Boaz who will see them and care for them? For those, Father, who taste your redemption and celebrate in it, would you open their eyes to see others who need it and open their mouths to share it? Father, thank you that you redeem us. Fill our hearts with gratitude. In Christ's name, amen.